Today's daf in Masechet Menachot, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is Daf Samach Zayin, and we're right at the top of the daf. So we've been talking about Trumot and Maasrot, and what happens if the Hekdesh had actually first owned something, and then at the Bishaat, the Miruach was still in the Rishus of Hekdesh, and then you were paid it. So we thought originally, at least learned by the Rebbe Kahana, that this was a machlokes for the Akiva and the Chachamim. Turns out that it wasn't. Everybody is made it, that miruach of hekdesh. It says deganecha means your personal grain, the lo dagan hekdesh. So when it comes to trumas and maaseres, miruach of hekdesh paters you. Now the question was, what about if hekdesh actually makes the dough? And there, the moment of, so we said before, we were talking about a case of somebody's paid the grain, makes the dough, that of course they will be chayev in challah, and the only question was, will they also be chayev in trumas and maaseres because of the question of miruach hekdesh? But as it turns out, there's really a question about what would happen if hekdesh would be megalgal the dough. We talked about if you would be megalgal the dough. So Gilgal hekdesh, definitely paters. If first it was turned into dough, and then someone was paid it, it says beferish in the Mishnah Masechet Challah, igdisha isata ad shelo gilgalah. So if a woman gave a hekdesh, a gift of her dough, before she actually mixed it with the water and started to make the dough, and then she was paid it, she becomes chayiv. Because basically it belonged to her at the time that it became chayiv. So in that event, if she actually was paid to it and then made the dough, so then she would be chayiv. But how about also if she made the dough hekdesh after she made it a dough, after she mixed it with the water, then also she would be chayivet. Because she first had made it into dough and was chayiv, and only afterward gave it to hekdesh. But if she was makdishat shelo gilgala, so she made it kedesh before it was mixed with the water, and then she went ahead and was paid it after the gizbar had already turned it into dough, and he had mixed it himself, v'acharkach pidata, then it would be potter. Why? Because at the moment that it became chayiv in challah, which was arisotechem, at that moment, it was potter, because it wasn't arisat hekdesh. It was arisat hekdesh. And because of that, it would be potter. Now, that much is clear to me. The question is, boy, Rava, what is not clear to me? So, in other words, I have understood a number of things, which we started yesterday, which Rava had spoken about, the pshitalit. So it's clear to me that if we have miruach hekdesh, that miruach hekdesh potters. And it was clear to me, all of this yesterday, was clear to me that Miruach Akum was a machlokas according between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda on one side, and Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yossi on the other side. So according to Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, it would be Chayiv, and according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon, it would be Prot. And it's also clear to me that that Gilgal of Hekdesh is Prater. Now, I want to know what the din would be of Gilgal Akum. Like yesterday, I discussed Miruach Akum after Miruach Hekdesh. Let me also clarify what the din would be about Gilgal Akum itself. So what is the din over there if a guy owns the dough and he is Megalgalit? So that also seems to be a very clear mission in Challah. And it says, someone who became a ger, and at the time that he became a ger, he had some dough. And now the question is it chayev in challah or not? So if he had mixed that dough before he actually did the giyur, so then it's potter. Why? Because it was Gilgal Akum. Mishinit gayer, if, however, he had finished his giyur and then he made the dough, then he would be chayev. Now, if we're not sure basically when it is that it happened, whether it was before or whether it was after the Giyur. So he, meanwhile, was in Besdin. He was going to the mikveh. Meanwhile, back at home, they did the Gilgal. And we don't know whether it happened right before, right afterwards. So since it's a suffix to your Isa, you're not allowed to eat something that is chayiv and challah and is now chulin, and you never took the challah from it, then you would be chayiv, because you'd have to be machmir. So the first part says clearly that if the dough had been made before the giyur, would be potter. Now, question is, who exactly is the author of the Mishnah? I mean, because I could look at it in two ways, says Rava. I could say that even Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who said that when it came to the chiyuv of Meiser, that if we had me ruach akum, it still would be chayev. That might be dafka lagabe mi ruach and trumas and Meisers. But when it comes to the question of Gilgal, of making a dough, they might be meida that here it is not chayev. I'll tell you why. I mean, Yilchora, it's exactly the same, right? But if you take a look at the Psukim, you'll see that there's a very crucial difference. Because where we're talking about over there, Benogea Meiser, the Lashon of the Pasuk is, and over there, remember that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda are Mechayev there. But you know why they're Mechayev there? Dichtiv, by Meiser, it says Diganecha, and it says Diganecha actually three different times we have that Pasuk. So there's a Diganecha Yetira. So what does it say? Let's go, just go through the Pesukim. So we have the Lo Tuchal Echol B'Sharecha Ma'aser Diganecha V'Tiroshecha V'Yitzarecha, right? So that is one Pasuk, and it stresses your own Dagan. Diganecha Ma'aser Kein would not include the Dagan of an Akum. Then we also have the V'Yachalta Lifnei Hashem Elokecha B'Makom Asher Yivchar L'Shaken Shvoshan Ma'aser Diganecha V'Tiroshecha V'Yitzarecha. The same Lashon, which repeats Diganecha again. And then we have a third Chiyuv, Reshit Diganecha, and so on. So Reshit Diganecha T'Roshecha V'Yitzarecha V'Reshit G'Yitzonecha T'Tenma. So now, let's take a look at what we would do with those three uses of Diganecha. So our second Diganecha, the Diganecha Yetira, it ends up becoming a Miut Achar Miut, and ein miut achar miut ela l'rabot. So maybe the svara of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda was that since after teaching us the ikar halacha, the Torah repeats it again and again, it's coming to be mar bedavke even of the kochavim, because that is always the halacha of miut achar miut. Mashenkein over here, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda would be made it, that when it comes to gilgal of dough of an akum, it only says arisotechem two times. And I'll tell you what we do with those arisotechem. So remember, arisotechem is your own dough, not the dough that comes from Akum. So let's hear the psukim, one after the other. Reshit arisotechem chala tarimu truma. And the next pasuk is, right afterwards, me reshit arisotechem titnu. Okay, so we have two times the idea of arisotechem. So one tells me the shiur. Arisotechem means what the normal achila was in the midbar. What was that? That was each one got every single day the isa that they would make, and that was the shiur of the month exactly. And that month was, it says beferish, gives us the shiur of the month, and we know that in modern terms, we have that shear with the number of beitzim, exactly as we'll work out in a second. So that means it has to be the same as what fell to you in the midbar. What fell to you in the midbar? Omer was one Omer Lagogot. And Omer, remember, is an Asiri Taifa, as the Torah says, Beferish, Omer Asiri Taifai, which is, ends up, if you translate it into beitzim, it ends up to be mem gimel beitzim, 43 beitzim, plus chamishit, one-fifth of a beitzal. So that would be the precise shiur that you have to take challah from. If you make dough that's less than that size, that's not called Arisotechem kidei es isatchem, and Mimela it would be potter. Okay, obviously I need the pasuk for that. And the second one is exactly what it says. Arisotechem, only your own. Masha'inki, not isat of the kuchafim, not isat hegdesh. So therefore, it's very possible that in this case, even Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, who were marbe, the chiv of meiser, trumas and meisers on an amiruach akum, because of ein miyadach miyadal al rabbis, over here they would be made that the din of arisotechem is actually coming to be memayit, because we don't have that extra one. That's one way I could look at it, says Rav. And I'll tell you how I could look at it exactly the opposite way. Perhaps even Dafka Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon, they were the only ones who would hold this. Because since they pater, the din of miruach akum, so they pater also that it's arisotechem v'lo arisotakum. Masha inkein, Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, they would say that the same way that miruach akum is chayev in trumas ha'maisra is, they learn out a gezera shava. Since it says reishis in both cases, so it says reishis b'negia Maisras, Reishis de Ganechati Roshav Yitzarecha. So there we have the Chiyav of Trumas and Maisras. And it says Reishis de Ganecha. So therefore, just like they have the Pasuk that tell me Ruach would be Chayav of an Akum, so too they would make the Gzera Shava that Gilgal Akum on Reishis Ariseter is also going to be Machayav. And maybe that's the Pshat, in which case the Mishnah would be going not like Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, because it only worked out a little bit of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, the Mishnah and Kallah. Omar Rava, you know, this bothers me so much, and I can't figure out, like, how am I going to know the answer to this? I'll have to have a dream, and in the dream, I should be given the answer. Somebody was mispalal to have a dream. Yehei Rava, dechazye bechelma. I should be zeicha to see the answer in a dream. Hodar Omar Rava. And afterwards, now the question is afterwards after the dream? Or is afterwards before he had the dream and say, never mind, I figured it out myself? Hodar Omar Rava. So he's not exposing the exact issue. But afterwards, normally Hodar Omar Rava means after you think about it. So Hodar Omar Rava. I think it's quite clear that man di omra miruach akum is potter, would hold that Gilgal of Ekechavim also potters from Chal. And man di omra miruach akum ino potter, but if you hold like Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, then he would hold Gilgal akum ino potter also, and that's because of the Gzera Shava of Reishis, Reishis, and therefore we'll have to say that the Mishnah is not going alibet Rabbi Meir. Of Papa Rava, how can you say that if we Brita says that an Ove Kuchav, and he was Mafrish, a Peter Hamor, so he had a sheep, and he had wanted to use that sheep to be paid a donkey, which of course is a Chiyavani Yisrael to be paid a donkey, or let's say it was an Ove Kuchav that wanted to take off Chala, that actually took off Chala from the dough, we tell him, it's a very nice gesture, sir, for the office Christmas party, but it really is meaningless to us. And your putter, there is no din of your Peter Hamor requiring pidyon. It's only a din in Yisrael. And there is no din in your needing to take off challah. And therefore, you can't create a kedusha of challah, in which case we tell him, look, your challah can be eaten by anybody. So challato is nechelet lezarim, and the peter chamor itself, without needing any kind of pidyon, can be treated like any other animal and not like a peter chamor, which before pidyon is osur begizav aveda. In this case, it would be mutter begizav aveda, kozez vi oved bo. Now, why do you think that the Braita Dafka speaks about a Peter Hamor and Chal. I mean, why not talk about straight out if you wanted to take off Truma and Meiser? Like, these are sort of unique cases, wouldn't you say? So the Mashma'ut is that the only time we tell him this, that he's not Chayev, is Benogea Chala and Benogea Peter Hamor. Mashma, that if you're talking about the Trumas and Meisers, then Enochinami, if he had taken off Truma, it would be Asura, like any other truma, and his czar would not be allowed to eat it. So, in other words, he understands that the deganecha is not going, it's going to be a miut achar miut, and he won't learn out from reishis, and he's going to tell you that it's usher. So now, is that clear? Says Rav Papa, let me just talk this out in case you didn't understand. It's clear that this tana holds that Mimuach Oved Kochavim Eino Porter. He's not telling you that this guy, if he took off Trumas and Meisers, that they wouldn't be us. Oh, no. He very studiously avoids that case. So what does that mean? It means that he holds Mimuach Akum does not Potter. So Yotzek Rebbe Meir and Rebbe Yehuda, right? And nonetheless, he holds that Gilgal Oved Kochavim does Potter. Now, you said, Rava, that no, actually, it's learned out one from the other with the Gzera Shavav, Reshis, and therefore if you hold, like Rebbe Meir, Rebbe Yehuda, that the din of Miruach Hakum is not Potter, Gilgal Hakum wouldn't be Potter. Well, here I'm showing you a concrete case, the Tanis says Beferish, that I hold Miruach Hakum is Chayev, and I hold Gilgal Hakum is Potter. So obviously, we don't have this Reshis, and it's possible to hold both of them. One of them has, as you originally suggested, you know, one of them has a double, a miyat achar miyat, and one of them doesn't. And then another question that Ravina asked against Rava, not just Rav Papa, but Ravina showed Rava a braita that also is mashma not like him. It says like this, Chalat oved kochavim ba'aretz. If a goy takes off challah in Eretz Yisrael, so he, meaning that he has Dagon that was Chayev, really, Midiraisa. This is Dafka if he's in Eretz Yisrael, or Truma, if he takes off Truma, even if it's in those places where the Rabbanan were Gozer to take off Truma in Chutz La'aretz, so then, Modi'ino Toshu Patur. And what's more, so we tell him, listen, you didn't have to take that off. Your challah can be eaten by anybody. It's not really challah. And the truma that you took off over your chutz la'aretz, if it falls into chulin, it's not going to create any kind of isurin. Okay, but I mean, obviously, we're making this distinction between challah, dafka, in Eretz Yisrael, and truma outside, which is mashma that truma in Eretz Yisrael, would be mamish truma. And it would be midamat, right? Okay, so what does that Tana hold, says Ravina? What does that Tana hold about Miruach? Obviously, a Tana holds Miruach Akum Eino Poter. He holds like Rebbe Meir. Because otherwise, why would he not Pater also is Truman Eretz Yisrael? Because the din is that his Miruach doesn't Pater. He only was ready to say that if a guy was Machmer on himself, even on the Derabbanan, so then it wouldn't have a din of truma, but otherwise the miruach wouldn't pater him. And yet, despite the fact that he says miruach doesn't pater in Eretz Yisrael, his truma would be midamat, he says that the gilgal, if he makes a dough, it is pater. Here's a clear-cut raya that we don't have this gzera shava gracious telling me that if you hold miruach akum paters, gilgal akum paters, and if you hold Miruach doesn't pater, then Gilgal doesn't pater. Here's a Tana that says Miruach does not pater, and Gilgal does pater. So Rava clearly, in saying whoever holds one would have to hold the other, is wrong? Well, not necessarily. I mean, maybe these Brises are only saying that the Rabbanan were Machmer. And Rava wasn't saying that there's no din to Rabbanan. Rava was saying Midiraisa. So maybe it could be that these Brises would agree with Rava that as far as the D'Oraisa is concerned, that Inafinami, it's going according to Mandioma, that the Miruach does Pater, And it's just that the Rabbanan goes there in Eretz Yisrael, and it's a din in the Rabbanan. Why would the Rabbanan make such a takana? Because Gzera Mishum Ba'alei Kisim. They made this takana because of rich people who are going to be paying out hundreds of thousands in Meiser every year, because maybe they have gigantic farms and they're willing to do whatever they need to do to save themselves that amount of money. So what would they do? They would set up a corporation in Switzerland that would be the owners of all of the grain that they grew. And that way, it would actually belong to Goyim. They would have the agents do the actual work on the grain. And then they would transfer it back to the owners of the corporation as individuals. And then they would be putter from Meiser. So the Rabbanan wanted to cut out that kind of behavior. No more tax loops on Meiser. So they made a gezeira, and therefore they said that, look, even if it's done by an Akum, it's going to be Chayiv Derabbanan. That's the point, says Rava, but it's not really telling me anything about the D'oraisa. Well, wait a minute, Rava. I mean, so then couldn't large bakeries do the same thing? They would transfer the dough to a Swiss corporation, and then that way they would get away without having to take off any challah. So why didn't you make a gezeira like that on challah? I mean, the whole point of the Mishnah is to tell me there's a difference between challah and trumas and maaseres. Why? Yochi afilu challah nami. If you got a large bakery and an enormous amount of money is going out for challah, so they should do the same thing. They'll sell the bakery to some Swiss corporation. Then after it's all processed, then they would be transferred back to the shareholders. So why would they have only made the takana in terms of truma? They should have made it in terms of challah also, which implies that this is not the reason. Well, no, that's not the point. It won't help. Because lemaisa, if they really want to get away without taking challah, all they need to do is make smaller batches. So all they would need to do is have a little bit less than 5/4 of a kav. Now, this va'od is not so poshut over here, because the va'od is going aliba de Rabbi Yossi, and the pashtus is really the omer, which is precisely the 5/4, which is 43, as I said, beitzim plus a fifth. It's Rabbi Yossi who holds that whenever you have a mida that is going with beitzim, it is always talking about slightly larger beitzim. Because the Torah doesn't give you a minimal beitzim, it gives you a larger beitzim. So you add a little bit more for the hechreya, so to speak, of those beitzim. However, we don't paskin like that. And so it's a little bit strange that the Gemara would bedafka say the ode over here. Why would we be going dafka to mention specifically a shita, which isn't true? So, okay, don't know. But it could be that it's just a girsa issue. Certainly in other places where it mentions, it sure doesn't mention the ode in the same type of sugya. Anyway, but the question is, you could get away without being chayiv challah.
And isn't there a tremendous amount of tircha? Isn't that a factor? But the amount of effort that it would take to make it.
It bothers me also. I don't know. I guess it's worth financially. It's worth it. So if that's the case, says the Gemara, okay, I understand. But then you could also get away if people are, you're telling me if people are desperate, so then even if it's going to be tircha, as Rabbanea just pointed out, if they want to save the money, they'll figure out how to save the money, even if we make a takana. So can't they do that with Trumas and Maisus also? Because what you could do is you could actually do Rav Hoshaya's Eitza. Because Rav Hoshaya said that you can be Ma'arim You can be, how would you say Mariam in English? Sneaky, I guess. You could sneak around the chiyuv of truma and meiser by doing machlisa b'machshela. You don't do the gemar malacha before you're machlisa to the bayit, and therefore it was never ended up becoming chayim, and therefore it would be petura min ha-maaser, and that way kadesh tei ben tochelet, it's going to be kosher for your animal feed, and there should be no problem. So could you do that? Or, I'll tell you what else you could do. If you want to make it totally putter, instead of transferring it to a Swiss corporation, all you need to do is transfer it to Santa Claus. Now, Santa Claus obviously is going to take all of this grain down the chimney. And if the grain comes down the chimney, then it's not going to be chayev because it wasn't reya pnei abayis in a normal way. So inami, demaya lederech gagot, you could always bring it down from the roof, and that way it wouldn't be nichnas, wouldn't be bala bayit at all, or derech karfifot, or you could bring it into like by a backyard or something instead of coming directly into the house, and that would also pater it. So if you're really, you're telling me that, look, if people are desperate, they'll do anything, so what's the point of our making a gezeira? So then I ask you the same question. If they didn't make a gezeira, l'gabei challah, because you could do this very schleppy thing of making less each time than the chiyuv of challah, so then they shouldn't bother making a takana, because you could do this very schleppy thing of every single time calling on Santa Claus to come and to take it down through the chimney. No, there's a big difference. Santa Claus, everybody will see, and everybody will make fun of him. What an idiot. The guy is so desperate not to do a mitzvah that he actually calls on Santa Claus. So awesome, before Hesia, the guy's going to be embarrassed to look such a cheapo. And Zila by Milsa, it's like, makes him look very cheap. He's not going to want to do that. So Lemaisa, he's going to have to use the Swiss idea. But the Swiss idea, we can get around by making a takana that you'd still be chayav. Masha Enkein, so where it's Nogea Chala, over there, I mean, look, you're going to be b'chayev me to make it look. This is the way I bake, you know. I like these small, delicious, well-mixed doughs. Leave me alone. How I make my dough is my business. So they're lo zila b'milsa. And therefore, because of that, what's the point of making a takana to prevent the transference to his Swiss corporation if all he's got to do anyway, if he's desperate, is make smaller batches.
Outsmart it. What do you think of outsmarting it? That's not.
Maybe the time has come for Barnea to outsmart himself. I know Mo Willie was looking to cut in.
I won't.
Okay, we got.
I won't take the punishment, Rebbe.
Oh. Sir Richard, that's your cue, Richie.
Sorry, Rabbi, I'm a little groggy this morning.
Ma yomi yomim.
Zot ha'elek mishnah.
I don't think Grandpa would have been very impressed with that one. Let me tell you. Man. Is probably thinking that this? Oh, mine? Good hell.
You know, maybe Grandpa, I mean, he may have had trouble with Cossacks or something, but I don't think he had all these missiles flying around at night and semi-warnings and things like that.
How long are you going to use this missile excuse?
Long as it's around. Hopefully it'll finish soon and I'll have another excuse to use.
It was thunder last night.
Yeah.
That was thunder. I know.
It was
that,
thunder.
But, you know, you never know.
A lot of people were fooled. Man, very interesting. It sounded so much the same. It was. Okay, so we've got a sort of compromised introduction to a Mishnah, but we'll use some of our extra Rosh Chodesh energy to make up for the missing grandpa. Bolo le'isara. So, we now have finished preparing the the flour. So we finally got our barley flour. Now, how do we turn it into the Minchas HaOmer? Well, we take that Yisaron and we do the regular stuff that we would do to any other mincha. Natan shamno, ulavonato. So you put into the bisa, you put in shemen and lavona. Now, this doesn't make any sense, because why in the world would you put the lavona together with the shemen into the bisa if you're not allowed to mix the lavona into the actual mincha, because then you won't be able to do kmitza? So you'd have to sit there painstakingly removing all the lavona. So this doesn't make any sense. And the truth is, if you take a look in the Rambam makes it a regular mincha. He just goes through the regular steps of the mincha for the Yomer. He does not say to process put in, he says to put in lavona afterwards. So apparently he understands that the Mishnah is just saying totally, in the end, this is what you would have done. Lamaisa, you would do your normal yitzika, belila, you'd put on the lavona afterwards on the side, so you would still be able to do the komets without getting into a problem with the lavona. Then you would take the lavona, put it on as well. And we did whatever we usually do, except remember that we have tnufa and hagrasha. We learned that out before, that on the omer, we do both tnufa and hagrasha. After doing the tnufa and hagrasha, we do the regular kmitza. We're makter the kmitza on the lavona. That's matir the rest of it for the kohanim, the ashar, the echal, the kohanim, as kosher kosher in the azor. Now, lemaisa, misha korav haomer. Once the omer was brought, you know these Jews, once Pesach is over and you said, amavdo ben kedesh l'chol, you go out there and there's pizzas all over the place. Again, pizzas? Where the heck was there time to make pizzas, you know? Well, these Jews are very good at getting in right at the first financial moment. And so sure enough, the moment that the Omer was brought, you go out to your makolet and you find brand new batat hechsher on the new flour. Now, how the heck did you do that? Since you're not allowed to do any kind of real harvesting, the ketzira, the reishis ketzira has to be the omer. You can't do ketzira before. How did they do that? And apparently there was enough time to process it. Wasn't there a chashash that while it was being processed, maybe somebody would eat it? But how did they do that? Well, the truth is, it was shelo b'ritzon chachomim. So let's talk about what happened. Mishikar of omer, the moment that they, of course, there was an app that let you know exactly when the omer was brought, and that way you could run out to buy your chadash. So yotzin umotzin shukei Yerushalayim malei kemach koli. My gosh, they had regular kemach, and they had the kemach from koli, all from the new, that was up until this very moment, the new chadash that had been aser, and this was shelo b'ritzon chachamim, Divrei Rebbe Meir. Why? So, what do you mean, Shelo B'Ritzon Chachamim? Isn't it an Isser D'Oraita? So the truth is, yes, it's Isser D'Oraita to do Ketzira. But the way that this was done was, instead of being Kotzer, they actually went out to be Koteif. So they had all of these kids that were running around that it's mutter to pick with your fingers as long as you don't do Ketzira. So this was the best thing. I mean, Erev Pesach, of course, that was all about car washes and all the kids were doing car washes. But it was right after they finished the car washes, they would all run out and make money doing hand katifa, which was actually mutter. And nonetheless, Rabbi Meir says, this should not have been done. Because, look, somebody could have easily eaten something while they were working on it, not realizing, you know, while you're working, you don't notice. So because of that, Rabbi Meir says, nah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, no, there was no gezeira. The Chachamim were very happy with this. They wanted people to be able to have immediately food for Yontif and to have fresh matzah and so on. And so there was no gezeira. Now, this is very strange, because the man who's the big Gezerah guy is Rabbi Yehuda. And where is that? Well, Obviously, if we're talking about Pesach and getting our cars ready and so on, it's talking about Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to Bedikas Chametz. So what's the halacha over there? Are you trying to tell me that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who is not concerned that people may end up eating on something that they're not supposed to be eating and therefore made a gezerah not to be handling it? Because here in this Mishnah, it's Rabbi Meir who says, I'm nervous that if we allow them to do all of this processing, they'll come to eat. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, I'm not worried about it. So then how do you explain Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah Pesachim? Rabbi Yehuda says, look, you do the Bedikah, you're supposed to do the Bedikah on the night before night of Erev Pesach, right? If you didn't do it then, you could still do it in the morning of the 14th. And you can do it up to the time of the Sha'a Shishit when you're supposed to be burning it. But after that, we don't let you, because if you go ahead and you look for chametz after that time and you eat that chametz, so then you're going to be chayiv kara. So what, in order to get rid of chametz, it's better to expose you to a chashash, maybe you'll eat it. The chachomim say, no, not a problem. You weren't bodeg in time for the Shas HaBior, you can be bodek during Yontif and get rid of your chometz. Now, how do you explain the fact that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachomim inverted their shittas? In our Mishnahs, Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm not worried that people are going to pop something into their mouth. And over here, when it comes to Pesach, Rabbi Yehuda says, I am concerned they'll pop something into their mouth. And the Chachomim say just the opposite. Chachomim, usually Rabbi Meir, who argue Rabbi Yehuda. Here, Rabbi Meir says, I'm nervous. And over there, the Chachamim, undoubtedly includes Rabbi Meir, connected Rabbi Yehuda, they say, it doesn't matter. You could keep looking for your chametz. Something is very strange over here, right? Oh, my Rabbi, it's not strange. It's very different. Because Shiny Ocha, you have to take into consideration over here when it comes to Chodesh, Shiny Chodesh. Since you were not able to do a normal katsira, remember, all these kids are running around doing kituv by hand. So this is like the season for the hand picking, right? So since you were only matir to do it that way, everybody's going to remember, whoa, this is crazy. Why can't we just, you know, take out the tractor or the lawnmower? I mean, what are we doing over here? So everybody is very aware that, oh, yeah, you're not allowed to eat this stuff. You have to say, you're not allowed to cut this stuff. So they're not going to come to eat it because you're constantly being reminded that this is special stuff that's usher. So Zahuru, he's going to remember. Omale Abaye. Okay, that's very nice as far as Katsira is concerned. But there's other things that are going to be done because you said that they go out into the market and they already got bags of flour that are kosher. How do you explain that? In order to do that, you would have to first grind it.
It's called cauliflower.
And you'd have to sift it. And how about doing that entire, all that work? What's going to prevent? That's done normally. There's nothing there to remind people that this is not edible stuff. So why wouldn't we make a gezerah there that you're going to pop it into your mouth? So tchina v'arkada, Michael Amima. Well, okay, you know what? The tchina and the arkada was a gezerah not to do normally. And you would have to do it in a very strange way. You'd have to do the grinding. You couldn't put the grain through your typical electrical grinder, water powered grinder. You'd have to use a hand grinder, a hand mill. So trina would be rechaya de yada. And the harkada, instead of putting it on the normal side of a sieve, you'd have to put it backwards on the other side of the sieve, put a little bit at a time. And that way you have a constant reminder that you are not allowed to be eating this. Well, there's another problem. What about a beit hashlachim? We're going to see later on that where you have a non-naturally irrigated field, where over there, it's actually mutter to do katsira, if it's not the regular growth, because it says, beferish, in the Mishnah we're going to have a little later, you are allowed to do a normal katsira, because those types of grain are not shaykh to bring the omer from. They are low quality grain. They're industrial grain, which is not good for the omer. So since it's not good from the omer, the Gemara is going to learn out that only if you have grain that is roy for the reishis katsircha, then you can't do any other katsir before. But if you have a type of grain that nobody would use for the omer, there's no isra of doing katsira on it. So what would prevent people from going down to the valleys, where over there you have a lot of commercial fields, irrigated fields, and the Mishnah says you're allowed to be kosher normally, how are you going to remember over there? It's still usher to eat chadash from anywhere. Kotzer beit ha-shlochim she'abamakim, but lo gochim. We don't put it into stacks the way we normally do, but what is going to remind people that are on the tractor that they're doing normal katsira, what's going to stop them from eating? That's not the answer, says Abaye. I'll tell you, it's a very simple answer. It's a totally different situation. Chadash and chametz are two different worlds. When it comes to chadash, the guy's been watching the grain grow for a month, okay? He is absolutely aware the whole time, this is not stuff I can eat yet, this is not stuff I can eat yet, this is not stuff I can eat yet. Masha Enkein, wherever he walks by a cookie, he always puts the cookie into his mouth. Look at his tummy and you'll see. So that means he is not badil from cookies, but he is badil from chadash. That's the difference. So chadash, he's not going to put in his mouth without thinking about it. But cookies, he will. And therefore, chametz lo badil minein. That's why we're worried, says Rabbi Yehuda. Listen, the guy is so used to putting a cookie in your mouth every time he sees it, that if he finds it, he'll, instead of rolling it down the toilet, he'll say, oh, yummy, and he'll eat it before he even thinks about it. And therefore, since this is a conditioned response, we cannot allow him to search for chametz because he won't even realize what he's doing before he's already got his hands in the cookie jar. Oh, my brother. Okay, that's a valid approach, but I don't understand why are we only talking about the difference in the contradiction between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda, right? Rabbi Yehuda over there by chametz says, no, 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 we're worried you're going to eat it. And Rabbi Yehuda over here by chadash says, no, we're not worried. Okay, you gave a very nice answer to that, says Rava to Abaye. And there's a difference that I'm more worried about popping a cookie into my mouth than I am about popping chadash. Fine. But what about the other contradiction? I mean, we got a contradiction in the chachamim. How do you explain that contradiction? You're explaining it in the opposite way. It should be even worse. So you're telling me only the Rabbi Yehuda, is a problem? But the Rabbanan is not a problem, that they contradicted themselves. They say in the Mishnah Psachim, you should look for chametz. That's even though if you find it, you have a conditioned response to eat it. But when it comes to chadash, you shouldn't. So there, how are you going to answer that? That's terrible, no? So the Rabbanan, Lokasho, how come you're only worried about explaining away Rabbi Yehuda? Why aren't you worried about the greater problem that you've created with the Chachamim? I shall tell you, says Rava. Hello, my Rava. Look, I'll buy into your answer on Rabbi Yehuda, okay? The Rabbi Yehuda, indeed, Kiddushanina, not a problem, like you said. There's a difference between conditioned responses and non-conditioned responses. But the Rabbanan, Lokasha, contextually, why are you looking for chametz? It says you're going to do bedikas chametz in the middle of Yontif, right? Okay, so you got all the kids and you're going around with your candle and wow, everything is... Tell me something. You think the guy's insane? We're looking for chametz. Okay, kids, we're going to be burning this chametz. Get it ready. We're going to find... And then you're going to put it into your mouth. That's ridiculous. The whole point that you're doing is hunting after the chametz to burn. I mean, for heaven's sakes, it would clearly ruin the show, wouldn't it? He's looking to burn it, and you're telling me he's going to eat it? Nah. So the context changes things. Therefore, no way. So we can understand the issues that make the difference, both for Rabbi Yehuda and for the Rabbanan. Rav Ashi says, I have a different approach to this, okay? The reason that Rabbi Yehuda is not a contradiction, Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha, is because what does it say in the Mishnah? Look again. What were they selling in the Mishnah? They were selling kemach and they were selling kali, right? Now, kemach and kali are not eaten immediately. You make things out of them. It's not normal to go and eat kemach and kali. So it's not something that you do without thinking about. Masha Enkin, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't say that there's a problem, because you're not used to eating that type of thing. Nothing to do with the Isser. Masha Enkin, if you find a nice cookie, that is standard to eat. So there, Rabbi Yehuda was gezer about chometz. But that is not true. No, the Ravashi Baruta, this stuff the Ravashi said is garbage. This is a mistake. He never would have said that. Tenach Mikoli Ve'elef, it's all very nice. Well, you're telling me that you were in the middle of processing it. You already got to the point where you dried it now in the oven. Now it's not ready to be eaten. You're going to have to make it into something. But if you're telling me that you had at the beginning, ad kali, before it became hardened, what was it? It was nice and soft. This is caramel. Caramel is delicious. Pop it into your mouth. So why wouldn't he make a gezerah that you're not supposed to be eating? If, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Chachamim weren't gozer, there's no problem. Why is there no problem? What's going to prevent people from putting that delicious, mushy, shmushy, delicious, pre-toasted? He'll eat it there before it became kali. So why wouldn't he make a gezerah? The Chitema, maybe you'll say, because, after all, at that point, you know that you're plucking it by hand instead of being kotzer it, and we've already said that that is a valid hakara, so the time at which it's going to be mushy and delicious is only during the time of kituf, and the kituf will remind you, no. Because, as I said before, what would you do about the takana in Beit HaShlachim? Over there, katsira, normal katsira is mutter, and you don't have the memory device of, oh, well, I'm not allowed to cut it, so therefore it must be usher. And that's in the Beit HaShlachim doesn't apply. Because as we said before, in the Beit HaShlachim, where you have a low quality grain that wouldn't be roy for bringing the omer from, then the din is that it's not usher to do normal katsira either. So how could that be mutter? Michael Amema, what about the takana? Why don't we say, listen, he's going to pop some of that delicious, soft, mushy caramel into his mouth. Eloha de Ravashi Barutahi. Clearly, what Ravashi said is not something that we can seriously entertain.